And our last case for argument, United States v. Rogers, Mr. Arata.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Pat Arata, and I represent Anthony Rogers. Both counsel in this case appropriately sought the guidance of the trial court before the trial to prevent against undue prejudice in testimony. The government sought to limit the testimony concerning one of the witnesses, Mr. Rogers' fiance, who was violently raped, which the court ruled was relevant because that explained why he had given her a couple guns and why he stayed at her house. But the court appropriately limited just to that fact and didn't permit going into gory details for fear of creating too much sympathy for this witness or Mr. Rogers. Also appropriately, Mr. Rogers' trial counsel requested that the details of Mr. Rogers' felony convictions not be allowed to come into evidence should he testify. The parties had entered into Johnny Lynn Old Chief stipulation concerning the felony conviction. But unfortunately, as the trial judge later admitted in the motion for a new trial, that she made a mistake, that she allowed the government to go into the facts and circumstances of Mr. Rogers' 10-plus-year-old convictions, and that they were for cocaine and for cocaine dealing. And it's because of that, and I think the comments of the Supreme Court, Justice Souter, in the Old Chief opinion, that going into the details of a person's convictions is so prejudicial that to even the denial of the stipulation is an abuse of discretion. And although reasonable people may disagree, it is the opinion of counsel for Mr. Rogers that as this trial progressed, as witness after witness talked about the felony conviction, and as whether it's on direct or rebuttal, and in the final crescendo when Mr. Rogers testifies that the details of the conviction, and in fact it brought out its two convictions, and it's for dealing cocaine, and the nexus between...
Would there have been any objection to proving that he was a drug dealer, because that would be germane to the weapon and his relationship to it? Anything wrong with that?
Yes, this was not a drug case at all, Your Honor. There was no drugs involved in this case. And that's part of the prejudice that I think a jury will have, that they think, well, we got a drug dealer, he's got guns, and obviously he's probably still dealing. The prejudice...
I mean, isn't it that he had nothing to do with the gun?
He testified that he had given those guns to her, I believe, in 2002 because she had been raped, and he had helped her.
The government's theory is that he's a drug dealer, right? The guns are for his... connected with his drug trade.
Well,
isn't that the government's theory?
I assume that's
so
what
he tries to show. He has nothing to do with the guns. They say, well, wait a second, you're a drug dealer. You're using these guns in your drug trade. Wouldn't that be germane evidence?
No, Your Honor. And what the connection that you have made supports our position that this testimony was so prejudicial. Mr.
It's a
Rogers
separate point. How prejudicial? The question is it probative? And you know, is it substantially outweighed by its prejudicial effect? That's the second inquiry. But it is germane, isn't it?
This was not a drug case.
Look, you keep saying that. Of course, it's not a drug case. But if the question are these his guns really? Then isn't it relevant to point out that if he's a drug dealer, that would certainly explain why he needs to have guns. That's probative. It may not be, you know, compelling, but certainly relevant evidence, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. The drug dealing deliveries were over 10 years before.
But it's the link to possession. I mean, he certainly does contest, are they his guy? Am I a felon in possession? And I certainly a lot of cases say that drug dealers very commonly have guns, given the fact that drug dealing is an illegal business and there are all sorts of other reasons why people have guns. So you would have to argue that there actually is nothing that ought to link up those two things. You couldn't say, well, because he's a drug dealer, it's more likely than not that this gun or these two guns do belong to him. And that's what I think, where the two threads link up, is on the possession point.
Well, the court ruled that this was not a case that hit the unusual circumstances where the details of the convictions should have come in under, I believe, 609B.
Well, sure, he takes the stand, though. That's really not the situation of Old Chief. Government's not, you know, proving up the element, the felon element of the offense through this testimony. He takes the stand.
But these are not crimes involving dishonesty. They're over 10 years old. Since that time, he went back in the military, was a drill instructor. There was no evidence of any drug dealing at all. It started with him purchasing a gun from Mr. Connor, and whether or not, you know, he was a straw purchaser. This was a strictly a gun case through and through. To interject the drug dealing is what I think really takes it over the top. The Supreme Court in Old Chief.
So you acknowledge that if there were evidence that he was currently a drug dealer, that would be relevant.
It may be for under 403 for motive, intent, right, those types of exceptions that if you are...
Yes, you just think the conviction was too remote.
It was too remote and unduly prejudicial. I mean, trials are impressions with juries.
We know that. Okay. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Arata. Mr. Holler?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. David Holler on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, we basically believe that the District Court made the correct ruling in this case. She determined after the trial that this was a case of harmless error. Inadvertently, a conviction was admitted that was over 10 years old. But the District Court did find initially that the probative value outweighed the prejudicial effect. She just later determined that the 609B rule that didn't substantially outweigh, and it should not have been admitted. But the evidence in this case was pretty overwhelming. In the first place, the conviction was only being admitted under Rule 609B for credibility purposes, and there was much stronger evidence of the defendant's lack of credibility. This was a case about the defendant lying on a federal form in one part.
But if it was used just to challenge his credibility, why mention that it was a drug case, that it was a drug conviction, or any? Why would it be necessary to identify the...
Well, I don't know that it's necessary to identify that information, Your Honor, but under Rule 609, I think it's permissible to do that, and that's what was done in this case. In any event, it could have been used for essentially 404B purposes like you're arguing, although the government didn't intend to use it for that purpose and did not intend to get into it at all until Mr. Rogers elected to testify and then elected to use it as it believed it was entitled to do because it believed the conviction was less than 10 years old due to a misreading of the rule. But ultimately, it wasn't put in for that purpose. It was only put in for credibility. And in this case, Your Honor, you know, on the possession count, there was extremely strong evidence of possession. The defendant himself admitted to handling the firearm. He admitted that the firearms were in unlocked cabinets in the room that he shared with
Harmless error argument, right?
That's our harmless error argument, exactly, Your Honor. And on the filling out a false form count, the best evidence of the defendant's credibility was that he had, on multiple past occasions, falsely filled out forms in an attempt to get firearms, in an attempt to reenlist in the military, and in an attempt to get an Indiana firearms license and avoid the checks that are put in place by the Brady Bill. So that's far stronger evidence than anything here. So we've really gone back to the harmless error argument, which I think is the easier argument, rather than talking about whether it should have come in. We could disagree with the district court and say we could have made an argument that it's substantially outweighed, but we've mm-hmm. that's what we've elected to do in our brief is just to fall back. So
okay, well, thank you.
We'd ask that you affirm.
Mr. Arata, do you have anything further? How much time does he have? 8 minutes? No.
Court has any questions? Okay. If not, I probably could rely on